Good morning. Today's daf is Ayin Vav 76. We are picking up on daf Ayin Vav, actually 2, 4, 6 lines down from the top. V'yishomer. So let's remember again, we had a statement on Amud Beis on Ayin Hey Amud Aleph, excuse me, that Kusim are not permitted to marry to each other. Meaning, Rabbi Elazar said, Kusi lo yisa kusis. Right? The Kusi may not marry a kusis. And again, in general, this seems to go ahead and really build on the statement of the Mishnah, namely that again, in general, Jews are not permitted to marry Kusim. So we're trying to figure out what's the problem with the Kusim. So we had a variety of different opinions yesterday. Says the Gemara Tanei V'yesh Omrim, so others will say, I'll tell you why you can't marry a Kusi. Others say, so this is 76a, six lines down from the top. So why can't you marry a Kusi? V'yesh Omrim V'fishen became b'dikduki mitzvos. Because ultimately the Kusim are not meticulous enough, are not careful enough with the details of mitzvos. So man yeshom. So we'll say whose opinion is this reflected over here? Amar Rabbi Dibar Avin, Rabbi Eliezer. This is the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. Why? Disanya matzas kusi muteres va'adam yotzei vayidei chavasu v'pesach. So we'll listen to this. What happens if a kusi makes matzah? So what's the status of kusi matzah? So the Gemara says, Rav Yehudi bar Avin says, excuse me, so the Tanakhama says that matzah's kusi is muteres. So what's the muteres means that it's not chametz. That's number one. And not only that, but you could actually go ahead and use the matzah of a kusi to fulfill your biblical obligation of matzah on the first night of Yom Tov. Now, if you take a look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says, Va'adam yotzeba, b'leili Yom Tov arishon, sh'matzah chova. This is specifically referring to the first night of Yom Tov, where matzah is obligatory. V'yotzeba, d'lo havike kimchene b'tzeiko sh'ovdei kochavim. So he says, Shalom Chamtsu, the Kaimalon, Adam and Malik Kreisomehem, Obivach Yochak, Zach Matzah Harris Bachrona, Shalom Matzah Smitzah, but Inon Shimor Lashem Mitzvah. So you must remember again, by Matzah for the Leil HaSeder, by Matzah for Pesach night, it's not simply enough that the Matzah not be Chametz. Thank you. Thank you. It's not enough that the Matzah not be Chametz, but rather, again, it's also important that the Matzah be made specifically for the purpose of the mitzvah. So the idea over here that the Gemara is saying is the matzah's kusi is not only kosher lePesach, meaning not only is it not chametz, but what? It's also, we assume the kusi has the ability to go ahead and infuse the right kind of kavana as well, to make it usable for the first night of Pesach. Rabbi Eliezer also, Rabbi Eliezer says it's also, you can't use matzah's kusi. Why? The fishin became b'dikduke mitzvos, because kusim are not meticulous enough with the details. In other words, the idea over here is because kusim are not meticulous enough with the details, therefore, again, you cannot assume that their matzah A is kasher lePesach, and you certainly can't assume that lemaisa, again, it was made with the proper kavana. So therefore, the Gemara Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, kol mitzvah sheziku b'kusim harbi medaktikim yosem miYisrael. This is actually a very interesting. Reb Shimon Gamliel says, when it comes to kusim, here's the deal. Anything they do with incredible kavana, right? Anything they do, they pay attention to every single last detail. Not only that, by the way, the wording of Shimon Gamliel is very strong over here. He says, anything they do, so he says, medaktikim ba yoser mi Yisrael. Right? Anything kusim do, so if kusim are going to do it, they do it with incredible, more intensity than even a regular Jew, so to speak. However, again, the corollary to that statement is that the stuff they don't do, they don't do. So therefore, again, the Gemara says, ve'alahachi ma'im b'kiyin. So okay, so I understand now, you want to tell me that the kusim are problematic because they're not medaktik, they're not careful with the details of mitzvos. How does that have a ramification over here by marriage? Meaning, so what does that have to do with our discussion here? So the Gemara says, oh, the fishin b'kiyin b'toras kiddushin v'gerushin. The issue over here is what? Is that the kusim are not vigilant enough, or they're not really knowledgeable enough in the laws of kiddushin and gerushin. I both say, what's the problem? If you're not knowledgeable enough in the laws of kiddushin and gerushin, so what happens? You could easily end up trampling on some mamzerus issues. So because of that, that essentially what the Gemara is saying is there's a concern regarding mamzerus. Therefore, again, you can't marry a kusi. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Nachman. And by the way, not only can you not marry a kusi, but as Rabbi Elazar said, kusim can't marry each other either. But Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Ravua, mamzer me'achos, mamzer me'eshesach, nisarvu mehen. So Rav Nachman says, Amar Rav Ravua, no, I'm going to tell you what the problem with kusim are. The problem with kusim is that there are mamzerim that were mixed in with kusi families. Specifically, again, if you have a mamzer, remember, we spoke about this before, the chil between mamzer me'achos, mamzer me'eshes ach. So, for example, a person produces a child with his sister, an act of incest, so that child is a mamzer. Well, that's machlokis, but right now the Gemara suggests that's a mamzer. But remember, that relationship is punishable by kares, not by misas bezdin. As opposed to, let's say, a person's sister-in-law, or another person's wife. Ultimately, again, these are relationships punishable by Misas Bezdin, and therefore they go out and produce Mamzerim as well. So Rav Nachman says in Rabba Bar Avua, the problem with Kusim is that essentially Mamzerim got mixed in. What types of Mamzerim? Mamzer Me'achoso, Mamzer produced from a union with a sister, or Mamzer from a sister-in-law. So the Gemara says, Ma'ka Mashmalon, Yesh Mamzer Mechayve Krisos. So first of all, it's such a strange wording. Why don't you just tell me that what? Why don't you just tell me that you can't marry into the Kusim? Why? Because Lamaisa, there's a concern of Mamzerim. Right? I mean, why do you have to phrase it this way? So maybe you're going to phrase it this way because you want to teach me a lesson. And the lesson is that even a union with a sister could produce a Mamzer, even though, again, it's quote-unquote Chayve Krisos and not Chayve Misas Bezdin, to which the Gemara says, Nisni Chado. So just go ahead and therefore say that you can't marry into the Kusim because what? Because there are Mamzerim that were produced with sisters that are mixed in. And that teaches me two things. Teaches me, number one, that you can't marry into the Kusim, ultimately why? Because of Mamzeros issues. And number two, that you subscribe to the idea that even a relationship punishable by Kares, not by Misas Bezdin, can produce Mamzerim as well. But why the need to say, because there's mixed in with them, Mamzerim that were produced from an illicit union with a sister, and Mamzerim that were produced with an illicit union from a sister-in-law. Why the need to say both of those things? To which the Gemara says, Maise Shahaya, Kachoya. Because the Gemara says, no, we're not trying to teach you anything than what actually occurred. So apparently, again, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that literally this is what happened, that over time, these types of individuals were mixed into the ranks of the Kusim. The Gemara is not trying to teach you any additional lessons. The Gemara is just simply trying to convey information. Ma'aseh shehaya, kach haya. So the Gemara goes weiter. V'rava Amarava says, the problem with Kusim is what? Eved v'shivcha nisarvu bohen, that the problem is that Eved and Shivcha, slaves, Avadim Kinanim, right? Shivcha Sivrios, Kinanios, got mixed in with them, and therefore again you can't marry into the Kusim. So the Gemara says, Isura Mishum Mai, so what's the Isur? Mishum Shivcha, Nis Nichadas. What's it? The Gemara asks the same thing. Why do you have to say that an Eved and Shivcha got mixed in? Why don't you just say that the problem is that slaves, Shvachos, married into the Kusim? Why do they need to say both of these things? To which the Gemara says again, Maise Shahaya Kachaya. The Gemara is reflecting certain historical realities, that there were documented cases of a slave, or documented cases of a slave woman, who ultimately married into the ranks of the Kusim. So I will say, so bottom line, although we have many, many different opinions, five to be exact, different opinions, as to why the Kusim can't go ahead and, number one, marry into Klal Yisrael, or why a Jew can't marry a Kusim, and furthermore, again, according to Rabbi Eliezer, why the Kusim can't marry each other. We have five different reasons, but again, bottom line, everyone agrees that that indeed is the halacha. Says the Mishnah. So you understand, of course, a lot of these things, all of these things, aren't, you could find them codified in Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, but of course they don't really apply today. And that's all, when I say all these things, that's true with the status of an Egyptian convert of, because remember, at this point in time, we operate under the assumption that Sancheiriv came along and mixed up all of the, meaning Sancheiriv was a global ruler, a regional ruler. He mixed up all of the nations, meaning Sancheiriv's strategy was that when he conquered a particular nation, he uprooted them and moved them to a different land so they wouldn't be on their indigenous land. He felt that that prevented rebellion, which he was correct to a very large degree. So the idea is that, you know, somebody from Egypt comes along today and says, I want to convert. So we don't judge that person as a Mitzri convert. You know, we say, okay, you could convert, but the first three generations, we assume that just because people identify with certain lands right now, they're not necessarily indigenous to that particular land, and therefore a lot of these prohibitions won't apply. Anyway, so you'd be hard-pressed to find a card-carrying Kusi today, but should you find one again, you know the halacha. Says the Mishnah, Hanose Isha Kohanes. So we'll say now an interesting case. A man is marrying a woman who is a Kohanis. So what happens? So the halacha is tzricha livdok, tzricha livdok. I will say, this is talking about the only real, well, a man married Aquinas. So this a person, so tzricha livdok achara arba imos. So we'll say, listen to this. So the Mishnah is not talking about that when you're a Kohen and you're marrying someone, so really it doesn't love that because it just has to be a Kohen. But when you're marrying a Kohenes, a person should go ahead and check into the family and check into up to four generations. Arba imos. Now we'll define exactly what this means and who these people are in just a moment. So Shehen Shmona. So ultimately, again, who become eight people. Now what does this mean? So I'm about to say, here are the people. Ima. You have to check into the woman's mother. Ve'im ima. And ultimately, the mother of her mother. Ve'im avi ima. And the mother of her father's mother. Ve'ima. And her mother as well. Ve'ima viha. And ultimately, the mother of her father. Ve'ima. And her mother. Ve'im avi aviha. And the mother of her grandfather. Ve'ima. And ultimately, her mother as well. So there are four primary mothers, but the idea is you're also going to check the mother of those mothers. So these are the people you have to check out before ultimately, again, agreeing to get married. Levia of Yisraelis, so we'll say this is true for a Kohenes, but for a Levia of Yisraelis, right? So what happens? Mosifen Alehen Od Achas. So we'll say for a Levi Yisraelis, you have to go ahead and add on one more mother. And we'll say, so what does this mean? This is interesting. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Mosifen Alehen Od Achas. Im Achas Bechol Zog. There's one additional mother added for each of the categories. So we'll say that what that effectively would say is, whereas for a Kohenes, you're checking out eight mothers in total, for a Levi Yisraelis, you're checking out a total of 12 mothers. So ultimately, we'll say we're going to see why this is. We're going to see what, meaning one would have thought that by a, well, we'll see why it is in the Gemara. So in both, but here's what's interesting. There are certain people where if they act in certain capacities, their acting in a particular capacity in and of itself is a seal of approval on their yichus. So for example, if a Kohen is doing the avoda on the Mizbeach, if he does the avoda, that tells us what? His yichus is perfect. And we're going to see why. Because in order to do many of these things, or hold some of these positions, you have to be vetted. You had a background check. So if a Kohen's doing the avoda on the Beis HaMikdash, that shows his background is fine. So he says, similarly for a Levi, if a Levi would stand on the Duchen, Rabbi said the Duchen was the platform on which the Leviim would sing. If a Levi is a member of the Levitic choir, he has a spot on the Duchen, then ultimately you need not do any additional genealogical investigation. Similarly, again, if somebody serves on the Sanhedrin, you need not do any additional investigation. But similarly, again, anyone who has in their family, so relatives who are Mishotre HaRabim, Shotre HaRabim will see, refers to other judges who are not on the Sanhedrin, but other judges. The Gabbai Tzedakah, this is amazing. So, you know, let's say, if a person has in their family, right? So my father is a Gabbai Tzedakah, that's enough of a shtempel, that's a seal on my yichus as well. So the halacha is in all of these cases, if people occupy these positions, masin lekuna, you can marry them off to the kuna, ve'ein tzarech livdok achareyan, and there is no need for any further investigation. Rabbi Yossi Omer, af mishaya, chasum eid ba'arche, hayashana shal tzipori. So Rabbi Yossi says, even someone who used to sign as a witness on documents in the court of Yeshana in Tzipori. So we'll say again, we'll see that in this court of Yeshana of Tzipori, they used to vet the witnesses very carefully. So if you were the kind of person that ultimately was able to go ahead and sign on documents there, that also indicates your genealogical fitness. The Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer, af mishaya muchtav b'isratcha shal melech. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus said, so too again, if you were a soldier in the king's army, that's also indicative of genealogical fitness. It says the Gemara, Maishna benashi batkinanu maishna begavri lo batku. So we'll say, so they ask the Gemara the following. So remember, the Mishnah begins with a very simple statement, which is that if you want to marry a woman, what's the halacha? You need to check out her genealogy. How much genealogy do you have to check out? It depends. If she's a Kohenes, you have to do four mothers who are eight. And if she's a Levi Yisraelis, you have to check out 12. So asks the Gemara, that's nice. Why is it that you only why is it that men are only checking out women and women aren't checking out men? In other words, why is there not a concept that ultimately a woman before she marries a man should check his mother's as well? To which the Gemara, this is actually a very interesting answer. Nashi dechi minatsu b'hadadi hadadi ba'arayosu diminsu v'em isa de'ika milsalo istekala. So Gemara says something very interesting. When women get into a fight and they want to challenge one another, they often call the other's virtue into question. Right? You're this, you're that, you're immoral, you're this. So that's how when women get really into a difficult fight, so that's ultimately how they impugn the other's integrity by making comments about the virtue of the other. So therefore, again, if there was a genealogical issue, then lemaisa, again, we would not necessarily know about it. As opposed to Gavri dichiminatsu bahadadi, bahadi adadi, we'll say men when they get into arguments. So how do they disparage each other? Biyuchsin hu diminatsi. What do they do? We'll say, you're a mamzer, you're a cholol, you're a shtuki, you're a kusi. So that's how men fight. So we'll say, so why is this helpful for us? Because generally, with men, if there is a genealogical issue, you'll know about it. In other words, so what the Gemara is saying is, people inevitably get into arguments at some point in time over the course of their life, and those arguments can get heated. So if there's some genealogical baggage, that's the mud that men will sling at each other. So if there is a genealogical issue or some hint to it, we'll know about it. By women, when they argue, they don't really argue about genealogy, but rather they argue about personal character or personal virtue, and therefore again, the Maisa, it may never come out. Therefore, again, this investigation is necessary. Why doesn't she go ahead and ultimately check out his mother's as well? In other words, why not go ahead? Look at Rashi. So we'll say, remember again, this is talking about the Kohenes. So the Kohenes is coming from a Kohanic family. So why isn't she obligated to check out his background in order to preserve her Kohanic familial integrity? To which the Gemara says, Misayeya le l'rav d'amrad hudomarav lo husuru kasheros l'nasi l'psulin. Achazos, we learned this 2 days ago, because we pass in like Rav, namely what? That although Kohanim are not permitted to marry certain people, those same prohibitions do not apply to Kohenes. They do not apply ultimately to a female. Therefore, again, there is no need for her to go ahead and really do an investigation into his yichus. So, Ravada bar Ava, Tani, Dalidimo Shem Shtemisrei, Bemas Nisa Tana, Dalidimo Shem Sheshisrei. So, we'll say, so we have a problem. Because here, Ravada bar Ava quotes another Braisa, and in that Braisa it says, you have to check out four mothers who are really 12. And then Rabosai, in another Braisa, it says, you have to check out four mothers who are really 16. Now, both of these go ahead and pose problems ultimately to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah says you have to check out four mothers who are really 8. To which the Gemara says, Bishlama, the Rav Ada bar Ava. So according to Rav Ada bar Ava, this makes sense. Amud Beis, Mokim La, Bilavio, Bas Yisrael. So we'll say, the four that are 12 is not a problem, because the truth is, our Mishnah spoke about those as well. That's the Levi and Yisraelis. Remember again, so the Kohenes needs four who are 8, four primary mothers, and add on their mothers. Ultimately, again, that's 8. The Levi and Yisraelis require the four primary, plus their four, plus add on another four that ultimately gives us 12. Ela Masnisa Nema Pliga. But ultimately, what about the second Braisa that says that you require 16 mothers? Ultimately, again, it seems to argue on the Mishnah, to which the Gemara says, Ela Masnisa Nema Pliga. Lo, my old achos, no, what does it mean ultimately again, another mother? Zug achos, we'll say ultimately means another pair for each of the imos. In other words, it's possible that when the Mishnah says that for Levi and Yisraelis you need another mother, means another pair of mothers. And therefore, again, that would give us a total of 16. This entire discussion reflects the view of Rabbi Meir. However, Chachamim will say, the Chachamim say, Kol mishpachos becheskas ksherosim omdos. So we'll say, this is a very important shita. The Chachamim say, we don't have to start getting into checking into mothers and 16 mothers and 25 mothers and 4 mothers and 8 mothers. Chachamim say, a family has a cheskas kashrus, unless, of course, what? You know to the contrary. In other words, that what Rabbi Meir and the Mishnah to a certain degree presupposes is that you don't have a cheskas kashrus meilav, meaning that cheskas kashrus has to be established through investigation. So it's just a shaila of, how many mothers you have to investigate. The Chum say, not true. Every family has a cheskes kashrus. And therefore, by definition, there is no need to check anything out, unless, of course, you hear something that requires investigation. Ini is that so. V'hamarav chamar bar goryo amarav mishnah seinu kishikori alav iror. But we'll say, yet we learned that Rav said that our mishnah is actually talking about a case where what? Where lemaisa, again, there was some level of objection about the family. Now, also what the Gemara now is suggesting is that lemaisa, in the case of the Mishnah, is where there was iror, is where somebody raised objections about the family. Now, bepashtos, even the Chachamim would agree that if there is iror, if somebody is raising genealogical objections about the family, then there is an obligation for investigation. And what would that investigation look like? So that's where the Mishnah comes in. The four mothers who are 8, or the four mothers ultimately who are 12. So the Gemara says, man de masniha, lo masniha. So it could be that the one who mentioned this price is not the same author of the Mishnah, to which the Gemara says, man de masniha, lo masniha. Look at Rashi. Man de masniha, mishmei drav. Lo masniha. V'amorai ninu, Rav Yehuda, Rav Chama, amli b'drav. So we'll say, it could very well be that there's just simply a machlokes regarding what Rav himself held. Fine, Ibai Sami, the other possibility is, I'm sorry, Ikadamri, Am Rav Yehuda, Am Rav, Zudiv Rabbi Meir, these words are Rabbi Meir, V'chom Omrim, Kol Mishpachos Becheskes Kashosim Omdos. So we'll say in this version you have Rav saying that these are the words of Rabbi Meir, the Mishnah, meaning that you require investigation. However, again, there's also the position of the Chacham. The Chacham hold, every family has a Cheskes Kashos. Amarav Chamabar Gurya Amarav. However, Im Kore Alav Iror Tzarech Livdok Achares. We'll say in this second version it's more explicit. In this second version, the halacha says the following. Every family has a cheskes kashrus. Every family has a presumption of being genealogically fit. In the event that objections or issues are raised, then what? Then there is an obligation to investigate. And what does that investigation look like? So for a Kohenes, it's four mothers who are 8, and for a Levi Yisraelis, it's four mothers who are 12. Says the Gemara, in Bokim in Azeach Lamalos, remember again, the Mishnah said, however, if a Kohen is serving, if he's doing the Avod, he's working on the Mizbeach, that is enough of a shtempel on his genealogy, and he doesn't require any additional investigation. So the Gemara says, my time, but what's the reason? Ilav debat kua lo habim maskin. I both say, we don't let any Kohen get up and do the avoda until what? Until what? Until he's genealogically vetted. So if he's doing that avoda, that means he's vetted. And therefore, no additional investigation into his yichus is required. Similarly, again, if a Levi is singing from the platform, is singing from the duchen, ultimately, again, he does not require any further investigation. My time, what's the reason? The Amar Mar Shesham Hayu Yoshim Yachseku Unim Yachselivir. It is actually amazing that here the Gemara says that literally there were a group of people, probably members of the Sanhedrin, who were tasked with, they were like the genealogy investigative unit. You know, their job was to vet all of the Kohanim and Levim. Therefore, again, essentially the Gemara is saying is if anybody is acting in a Kohanic capacity or Levitic capacity in the Beis HaMikdash, that by definition means they've been vetted and therefore they're genealogically fit. So the Gemara goes weiter. Similarly, again, if you're sitting on the Sanhedrin, there is no need for any additional genealogical investigation. So my time, what's the reason for this? The Tani Rav Yosef, because Rav Yosef said, Kishem Shebezdin Menukin Bitzedek, Kach Menukin Mikol Mum. So also Rav Yosef said that the same way that a Beis Din, Menukin Bitzedek Rav Yosef means that they're virtuous. They're virtuous people, meaning you can't go ahead and be a judge on the Sanhedrin if you're not a virtuous person. Meaning again, if you're not a righteous individual, Kach Menukin Mikol Mum. So it's Rav Yosef, the members of the Sanhedrin are also cleared or also freed from any genealogical blemishes. Menukin mikomum. Amar mereimar, mikra. What's the pasuk that supports this idea? Kulach yafe rayasi, umum ein bach. Chazabosai, the pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, you are totally beautiful, my beloved, umum ein bach, and there is no blemish in you. So the Gemara's understanding over here, that the rayasi, the beautiful ones, refers to the members of the Sanhedrin, and mum ein bach refers to genealogical blemishes. They're genealogically fit. Says the Gemara, well, 1 second. Ema muma mamish. Maybe mum ein ba literally means that what? That the members of the Sanhedrin can't have any physical blemishes. How do you know that's referring to genealogical blemishes? Maybe it's referring to physical blemishes. Amar avachare Yaakov amakra v'hisyatzvu sham imach. The pasuk says, Rabbi said, this is talking about Moshe Rabbeinu gathered 70 elders to help him with Klal Yisrael. So the pasuk says, Moshe, they will stand with you. This has to sham imach, with you. What does it mean with you? Imach bidomim lacha, with those who are like you. Rabbi said, now in what ways do the other judges have to be like Moshe Rabbeinu? So the Gemara is suggesting over here that they're like Moshe Rabbeinu in terms of the fact that they're genealogically fit. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu was miyuchas, he was genealogically fit, so too to be a member of the Sanhedrin, you have to be genealogically fit as well. The Dilma Mishum Shechina, maybe that was different. Maybe the difference over there is that those individuals had to be genealogically fit. In other words, the Sanhedrin of Moshe Rabbeinu's generation had to be genealogically fit. Why? Because they were given nevuah. They were given prophecy. So that's the reason ultimately they have to be genealogical. But maybe it doesn't apply to future generations. Amram Nachman Amakra, Vakel Me'alecha, Benosu Itcha. The pasuk says ultimately again, the people, the Sanhedrin, will lessen the burden from on top of you. Benosu Itcha, but they will bear the burden together with you. So Itcha, Bidomim Lecha, teaches us that what? That the members of the Sanhedrin must be like Moshe Rabbeinu. And just like Moshe Rabbeinu was genealogically fit, so too the members of the Sanhedrin must be genealogically fit as well. The next case, let's remember, anyone whose ancestors were of the Shotrei HaRabim. Shotrei HaRabim refers to judges, but not necessarily judges of the Sanhedrin, general judges. So the Gemara says, Shotrei HaRabim, Rashi says, Dayonin Ba'alma, She'inam Memanin Esrim V'Shalosh Shal Sanhedrin Ketana. So we'll say, so again, this is not the members of the high court, but rather members of secondary courts. So the Gemara says, why is this? L'meimra, so if a person is a member of a secondary court, that's a statement of genealogical fitness. Why l'meimra? Because what do we see from here? We don't appoint judges from people who are genealogically blemished. Or minhu, is that true? Hakol k'sherim ladun dinei mamonos, ve'inakol k'sherim ladun dinei nefashos. So we'll say, we learned, everyone is fit to adjudicate monetary cases, but not everyone is fit to adjudicate capital cases. V'havinan ban, we asked about this. Hakol asim, what does it mean when you say everyone? What does everyone mean? V'am Rav Yehuda, la'asuyei mamzer. The Rabbo say, even a mamzer could be a dayon. Even a mamzer could go ahead and be a judge to adjudicate a case. Rabbo say, now, you'll say to yourself, of course you can. What's the chiddush in that? Meaning, being a mamzer just impacts your ability to marry. Why should it impact your ability to do anything else? We'll see why in just a little bit. But nevertheless, the Gemara suggests over here that for dinei mamonos, for monetary issues, so even the mamzer is permitted to go ahead and adjudicate the case. Amar Abaye b'Yerushalayim. Oh, we'll say, so Abaye says, we're talking about in Yerushalayim. So we'll say, so now remember, if a mamzer is fit to be a judge, then what? Then the Mishnah statement is problematic. Because what did the Mishnah say? If somebody's a judge, that indicates that what? That their yichus is in order. But 1 second, if we just got finished saying that even a mamzer could be a judge, then being a judge in a secondary court is not enough to go ahead and solidify your genealogical fitness. So by what are we talking about? Shebi Yushalayim. Both we're talking about judges in Yushalayim. Rashi points out something amazing. Yushalayim, hayu makpidin al kol dayaneim liyachson. So we'll say apparently in Yerushalayim there was a particular insistence that all judges must be genealogically fit. Even though Me'ikra then, according to the letter of the law, in at least in monetary cases, you could have a judge ultimately who is a mamzer in Yerushalayim, they were makbid that judges should be genealogically fit. So therefore, again, if you're a judge in Yerushalayim, that indicates your genealogical fitness. So says the Gemara, V'chein Tani Rabbi Shimon Bar Zida, Bikidushe de Beit Levi b'Yerushalayim. Ultimately, again, what are we talking about over here? So the Gemara says, let's say that differently. Tani Rabbi Shimon bar Zera the kiddushei de Bei Levi. So Rabbi Shimon Bar Zera used to pass me about that kiddushei de Bei Levi means the laws of kiddushin as expressed in the yeshiva of Levi, Yerushalayim. Ultimately, again, the Mishnah statement that if someone is a judge, that indicates genealogical fitness is after talking about if they were a judge on a secondary court in Yerushalayim. Because in Yerushalayim, they were makbid, that only genealogically fit men should be dayanim. But outside of Yerushalayim, having a seat on a beis din does not automatically solidify your genealogical fitness. But Gabbai Tzedakah Masim, but it's another interesting case. So remember the Mishnah said, if somebody's a Gabbai Tzedakah, right? Gabbai Tzedakah means the person who was responsible for dispersing, collecting and dispersing communal tzedakah. So if a guy is a Gabbai Tzedakah, then you know that he's genealogically fit. Says the Gemara, my time up. What's the reason for that? So Kevan Deminsu Bahadi Inshi, because we'll say what happens, Gabbai Tzedakahs get into fights with people all of the time. They'll say, now this is interesting, why do they get into fights with people? The Amar Mar, Memashkinim Ala Tzedakah Vafilu Berev Shabbos. So we'll say, the halacha is, if a person makes a pledge to Tzedakah, the halacha is that one is supposed to honor that pledge as quickly as possible. Lo sacher l'shalomo. Person should honor the pledge as quickly as possible. So what happens to the Gabbai Tzedakah? Sometimes the Gabbai Tzedakah needs the money. So what does he do? He shows up at someone's house on Erev Shabbos. Now, no one likes last-minute company on Erev Shabbos, a little bit of a hectic time. And what does the Gabbai Tzedakah do? The Gabbai Tzedakah has the right to seize collateral if people aren't paying their debts. Can you imagine? So we'll say these are kehila debts. So a person not paying his kehila debts, so the Gabbai Tzedakah comes, so we'll say, so what happens? Can you imagine the scene? It's an hour before Shabbos, the Gabbai Tzedakah goes and knocks on the door, I'm here to collect your pledge. And I say to him, what? Really? Do we have to do this now? Right? I'm saying, can we just talk on Sunday? Matzei Shabbos, need to do this now? And what does he say? What does he say? Yes. And not only that, but he goes ahead and he takes my watch. He takes my watch. I'll just hold on to this until you pay your pledge. So says the Gemara, what happens? Vim Isa Diika, if the Gabbai Tzedakah had any genealogical flaws, guess what? Isle Kala. You know what? It would come out. When would it come out, Rabbi Osai? On Friday afternoon, as the Gabbai Tzedakah is taking my watch for collateral for my pledge. In other words, Rabbi Osai, this goes back to what we said before, which is that when men get into arguments, generally the way they disparage each other is through highlighting genealogical deficiencies. The Gabbai Tzedakah is someone who inevitably is going to argue and get into fights with people. That is going to happen. Therefore, again, Rabbi Osai, if it turns out that he does have genealogical deficiencies, those would come out. If they're not out, it means what? It means they don't exist. Therefore, the Maaseh of the Gabbai Tzedakah has a presumed cheskas kashrus. Ushbezichne derav adabar ava ki yurahava. So both say, the landlord of Rav Adabar Ava, and Rav Adabar Ava was a renter, so the place where he lived, his landlord was a ger, was a convert. Bahava ka mansi ihi v'rav bibi. And we'll say what happened. The landlord, who apparently was a strong and influential, wealthy individual, would constantly argue with Rav Bibi. And we'll say, what were they arguing about? Mar Amar ana avidna sirarusa demasa. So one of them said, I'm going to be in charge of the matters of the city. Umar Amar ana avidna sirarusa demasa. And the other guy said, no, I'm going to be in charge of the business of the city. So we'll say, so here, Rav Bibi and the ger landlord are getting into an argument who is going to run the affairs of the city. Us looking at Rav Yosef, they came before Rav Yosef to go ahead and settle this matter, who's going to run the city. Amar lehu Tanina. So Rav Yosef said to him, listen, there is a teaching, Som Tasim Alecha Melech Mikarev Achecha. We'll say, if you're going to appoint for yourself a king, your king must come from within the midst of your brethren. And I will say, now we know is, for example, a ger, a convert, cannot become a king, cannot become a melech. So that's for two reasons. Number one, because obviously a ger can't be part of Shevet Yehuda. Right? In order to be a ger, can't be part of Shevet Yehuda. And also, mikarev achecha, the Gemara understands, means that what? That the king has to be someone who is born a Jewish. Mikarev, from the midst of your brethren, cannot become someone who joins the fold of Judaism at some time later on. So the Gemara extrapolates from this, we'll say it's not just by king, but for any major leadership positions, a leader, someone appointed to leadership positions within the Jewish people, major positions, must come from the midst of your brethren, which by definition would exclude the convert. I will say, so Rabbi Adibar Abba said to him, but 1 second, would this include someone whose father was a convert, but whose mother was Jewish? So Amar Lei, No, what are you talking about? When we speak about both sides, that a person is excluded under the Mikara B'Chacha clause, that refers to someone himself who converted. But if someone has a Jewish mother, Abosai, whether his father was a convert or even if his father was a Gentile, what's the halacha? That child is a full-fledged Jew from birth and satisfies the criteria of Mikara B'Chacha. Hilchach. Therefore, again, Rav Yosef made the following pshara. Rav Bibi de Gavarabahu. So it appears from this exchange, by the way, that the landlord, although the Gemara is calling him a ger, what the Gemara really means is that he was the son of a ger. His father was a ger. So therefore, again, now Rabbi Yosef said, well, if his father was a ger and his mother was Jewish, then he's a Jew from birth, and therefore, by definition, he satisfies the mikarev achacha criteria. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef says, I want to suggest the following pshara. Hilchach. Rav Bibi Digaver Rabba Hava Le'ayin B'milu D'Shmaya. Rav Bibi, you're a great man. You take responsibility for the spiritual matters of the city, right? You're responsible for the ruchnius of the city, which means you're going to be in charge of the shuls, you're going to be in charge of the batei din, and you're going to be in charge of chesed and stucco. You take care of the religious matters of the city. Umar and you, other guy, we'll call him again, landlord, B'mili D'Masa. You go ahead and take care of the physical needs of the city, the mundane physical things, those are your responsibilities. Says the Gemara, Amar Abaye, Hilchach, Man de Mashri Tzur Mirabanon, Hilchach, Man de Mashri Tzur Mirabanon, Be'ish Bezichne, Le'ashre Kirav Adda Bar Ava, Be'yadala Mehapech Bezichuse. Therefore, again, the Gemara says, if you're going to have someone live by you, who is a Talmud Chacham, try to find someone like Rav Adda Bar Ava, who will always find your merits. In other words, Rav Osai, so Rav Adda Bar Ava, ultimately, again, trying to find his way to negotiate this situation. Fine. So Rav Zira Mitaba Bahu. So Rav Osai, so now the Gemara just discusses, now we introduce an interesting topic, which is what? The role of a ger in leadership positions. What leadership positions can you appoint a convert to? And what can't you? Now remember, when we're speaking about a convert, now we've also defined our terms. Convert does not, ger does not refer to a child of Gerim, because remember, we'll say now this is interesting because we spoke about this yesterday, that a child of Gerim does have certain Ger-like qualities or Ger-like status, but yet in this type of situation where there's a probe, where in order to go and appoint someone as a leader, he must come mikaravachacha from the midst of your brethren, so that if somebody is born to a Jewish mother, lemais, again, he satisfies the mikaravachacha. Now the Gemara is going to discuss, so let's talk about Gerim in leadership positions. So says the Gemara, Rav Zera Metapa Bahu, Rabbi Zera would go, Rashi says, Metapa Bahu means, Misasik Bam Lechabdun Loshim Misrara. Rabbi Zera used to appoint converts to positions of leadership. Right? He would involve himself with them, he would appoint them to positions of leadership. Rabba Barabu, Metapa Bahu, similarly, Rabba Barabu also appointed Gerim to positions of leadership. The Ma'arava in Eretz Yisrael, Afilu Reish Kuri Lo Mukmi. We'll say they would not even appoint a ger to be the Reish Kuri. We'll say Reish Kuri means the person in charge of the Department of Weights and Measures. In other words, so again, it's a leadership position. It's not exactly the most important leadership position, but it's in a leadership. In Eretz Yisrael, they were makbid that they would not appoint gerim to any positions of leadership. So the Gemara says, Afilu Reish Kuri Lo Mukmi. Benarda. Afilu Reish Gargusa Lo Mukmi Binah. In a Narda, they wouldn't even appoint the Gerim to be the heads of the irrigation department. So we'll say, remember again, what the Gemara is pointing out is the following. Here's what everybody agrees with. Everyone agrees to the fact that, let's say, to be king, so a ger can't be a king because the king must come ikarav achecha. We also understand that to some degree, that prohibition of appointing a ger to a leadership position does apply to other positions other than the monarchy. The shaila is how to define the scope of that prohibition. So some say it will apply to every single position of leadership, big or small. That seemed to be the approach in Eretz Yisrael Narda. Yet in other places, it seems to be that it was only reserved for monarchical type positions. But other communal leadership positions, again, you see these other rabbanim that were quite confident and comfortable in appointing gerim ultimately to serve in those positions. So the Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Yossi Omer Af Mishahaya. So the Gemara says, remember that Rabbi Yossi is even one who used to sign on documents. The Lashon over here was someone who used to sign on documents in the court of Yeshana of Tzipori. So the Gemara says, so this also attested to a person's lineage. Why is that? My taima, daikiyu mechasi. I'm saying this particular Beis Din, they would not let people sign without first vetting their lineage. Only if you vetted their lineage, ultimately, then would you have the ability to sign. Therefore, if they're signing on documents in this Beis Din, therefore, halacha lemaisa, again, they would be fine. Rabbi Yossi Omer Afmi Shahaya. I'm sorry. Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer. Suppose Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus said that if you served in the army of the king, that was also indicative of genealogical fitness. So says the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmua b'chayelo shel beis David. This refers dafka to the soldiers in David HaMelech's army. David HaMelech was apparently very medaktek. Utay mamay. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab. Kidei. I'm sorry. I'm Rabbi Yosef Mikra. What's the pasuk that supports this idea? So the pasuk says over here, v'hisyachashtam, or I should say, v'hisyachsham, batzava b'melchama. So ultimately, David HaMelech would only use soldiers with proper pedigree and yichus. The time of my, what's the reason for that? I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, k'dei shetei zechusan uzechus avosa messiah, messiahsa. Because I will say, remember, when you're going out to battle, you want every competitive edge. And therefore, again, David HaMelech only used soldiers for a proper yichus. This way, what? They would have their own personal zechuyos and also zechusavos, also the merits of their forefathers. Therefore, again, the Maisa, the Mishnah says that if you are a soldier in David HaMelech's army, that was also enough of a seal of approval on your yichus. Ay, Bahaika, Tzelek Ha'amoni. But there, what about, Shabbos said, one of the soldiers identified as a prominent soldier in David HaMelech's army was a guy by the name of Tzelek Ha'amoni. Ha'amoni. So presumably, again, I will say he's a Gentile. My love, the Asimi Amon. Are we not saying that he came from, meaning, did he not come from Amon? He's a Gentile. Lo, the Yosef Va'amon. No, I will say he was Jewish, but he just happened to live in Amon. Va'ika Uriachiti. What about Uriachiti? I will say, so again, calling someone a Chiti sounds like he's a non-Jew as well. My love, the Asimi Ches. Is it not that he comes from the city of Ches, and he's not Jewish? Lo, the Yosef Bechais. No, it means he was just living there. I vaha ika Itai Hagiti, but I will say, what about this other individual by the name of Itai from Gat? I will say, I understand that Gat was a Philistine stronghold. So is he not? He must have been not Jewish. So maybe I'll say, no. He was Jewish, but he lived in Gat. Va'am Rav Nachman Itai Hagiti ba ubitla. I will say that can't be, and I'll tell you why. Because Itai Hagiti, I will say, David HaMelech had captured from one of the monarchies that he conquered, he had captured a beautiful crown. And that crown had a stone in it. That stone was worshipped as idolatry. And Itai Hagiti was the one who negated the idolatry that ended. I will say that very quickly. In order to go ahead and negate idolatry requires a Gentile. Jews cannot go ahead and negate idolatry. Only Gentiles can. So Itai Hagiti had to come along and negate the idolatrous identity of the stone in order for David HaMelech to be able to use it in his crown. Which shows us what? That Itai Hagiti ultimately, again, was a Gentile. Va'od, Amrav Yehuda Amarav, Arba Meos Yiladim Hayolo David. David HaMelech had 400 children. The Kulan Bnei Yefastar Hayu. And they were all the children of war brides. I'm about to say, now this doesn't literally mean that David HaMelech, it means David HaMelech and his soldiers fathered 400 children from these war brides. The Kulan Mistaprim Kumi Omegadlim Beloris. All of them, I'm about to say, had a Gentile haircut. The Gentile haircut was, their hair was cut short in the front, and they had a Beloris. Beloris like a ponytail in the back. The Kulam Yoshim Mikrani Oshalzav, they all sat in golden chariots, Vayimahalchim Barashe Gaisos, and they would go out in the front of the army. The Hein Hein Bale Egrofim Shab Beis David. And ultimately, these were the most valiant soldiers of the Beis David. So, what do you see from here? You saw David HaMelech had Gentile soldiers in his army. He had Gentile soldiers. So, how can you say that serving in the army of David HaMelech is a seal of approval on your Yichos when it's clear that he had Gentile soldiers? To which the Gemara says, no. The Azli Leva'use Alma. Those soldiers of Moshe that went out in front actually did not fight. They were there to create a fear factor. As we will say, when the other Gentile nations saw that David HaMelech had Gentile soldiers in his army, so the message that sent was, David HaMelech is a conqueror. And he has conquered other nations as well. And look, he even has their soldiers fighting for him. When the other armies saw this put fear into their hearts that they would be conquered as well. But those soldiers who went out in front were in fact not the real soldiers of David HaMelech's army. They were just the front line to inspire fear in the enemies. But the actual soldiers who fought, David HaMelech would only use not only Jewish soldiers, but ultimately soldiers who had yichus as well, in order that they could come to battle not only with their own merits, but with schus avos, the merits of their forefathers. And therefore, says the Mishnah, if you served in the army of David HaMelech, that was a testament and a sign your genealogical fitness. We'll stop over here.